06-2968, the United States v. Moore. And good morning, Mr. McGowan. Haven't seen you in a while.
Nor are you.
How are you?
That's the way it works.
I am here on behalf of Mr. Moore as the appellant in this case. He was convicted by a jury of one count of distribution. And he appeals the district court's allowing evidence of 6 to 10 distributions before the offense conduct in this case. Before I go any farther, I'm going to address the government's strongest argument, which, as usual, is that even though they argued that it was necessary to the district court, to this court, they argue that the introduction of this evidence was harmless because the evidence that they had was so strong. I would like to address the strength of the government's case, which is fairly strong, but it's not as strong as the government would like you to believe. The transfer of the drugs wasn't seen. Otherwise, government did have a lot of evidence. But what's interesting about that is the confidential informant lied about that. He either lied to the agent right after the transaction, or he lied to the jury. He told the jury that he paid the money and then got the drugs. He told the agent that he first gave the CI the drugs and then the CI gave the money. Now, as this court's aware, the videotape shows the money being transferred before the confidential informant got into the car and they took a little trip. But the whole idea of the transaction changes if you look at it from the point of view of what he told the officer first. If what he told the officer first was that he got the drugs first, that brings into play the woman who was there earlier. And in fact, although I don't read juries' minds any better than anybody else, the jury asked a question that concerned essentially an aiding and abetting offense. And really, if you look at the first statement to Officer Turner, that's where that question comes in. Well, what if she had some direction from the defendant? And once you switch the transaction from the drugs are given first and then the money's given, the whole idea that the money was simply for the drugs doesn't necessarily follow. It could have been repayment of a loan. These people were friends. Could have been for any reason. And it could have been hidden by the confidential informant.
Well, you know, there's a standard implicit here because obviously harmless error is the government's strongest argument. This is not the most closely linked priors I've ever seen in terms of what exactly it is you're trying to do other than show propensity. But the government does have a lot of evidence. You know, they've got the video. They've got, and maybe there's like a minute, but the video shows a pretty consistent story. You've got testimony from Warren. You've got cell phone calls. You've got a lot of things in this case. So when it's all put together, the question on harmless error is there really any way that these references to the prior drug deals might have, you know, undermined our confidence in this outcome, might have made us think that the jury might have done something different? And I'm just not sure when the jury's sitting there watching videos that really is likely.
Well, Your Honor, there is a lot of evidence in this case. The phone records, though, they're corroborated by the evidence that they were friends. I mean, we're not objecting to the fact that they were friends, that they had known each other all their lives, and that they had practically daily contact.
Well, and the government also says, I mean, yes, you can characterize as their friends, but the government says, you know, how does he know which car wash? How does he know? You know, there's a lot that falls into place very readily with not much conversation.
Well, on the other hand, we are missing a phone conversation. the confidential informant told the government, told the agents that they'd already arranged it. So this phone conversation, you know, 15 minutes before they met, that's nice, and it is brief, but all of those terms could have been arranged beforehand. And in fact, the confidential informant could have been calling an answering machine. I mean, there are just a lot of options here. Now, the government does have a lot of evidence, but like I said, it's not quite as strong as you might think, especially when the confidential informant is lying to somebody about the act. Where this is a single distribution case, this is not a conspiracy case. And when you've got a confidential informant who's been impeached by, you know, the fact that he's just been a drug dealer most of his life, and of course, the fact that he's a drug dealer most of his life and is a good friend of my client's could lead a jury to the proverbial guilt by association. Certainly shouldn't be friends with this person. But other than that, he was there at the car wash, but there was this other person. And there was this, you know, there was some question about what actually happened, even based on the confidential informant's testimony. The other thing I'd like to point...
So the nature of the defense was that this woman who was loitering around the car was the one who supplied the drugs?
Well, she loitered around the car. She stuck her head in.
I mean, was that actually the theory of the defense?
That was the theory of defense. And like I said, if the confidential informant, what he told Turner was true, she comes into play because there's no other way that drugs could have been transferred. If he got the drugs first and then paid the money, which is, by the way, the more common way that this is done, she gave it to him, at least by the evidence that I've seen in this case.
But all the evidence established that this was a controlled buy, right?
Sure. That's what the government tried to set up. And he certainly
well,
showed up. My client showed up.
Right. There isn't any contrary evidence. I mean, all the evidence was that this was a controlled buy, not a random transaction. And so what sense does it make for the jury to buy the theory that, which they obviously didn't, that the drugs came from this anonymous woman?
Actually, all I'm saying is, and the jury did ask for an aiding and abetting instruction, and all I'm saying is that if you take the confidential informant's statement to the investigating officer immediately after this happened, he got the drugs first and then got the money, she comes into play. That's the only way you can look at it. And the question is, what's she doing there? How does she know that to have the drugs? Is it something that he arranged beforehand? I mean, this guy's a snake, with all due respect to the government.
They usually are in these cases.
They are. And, you know, the government admitted it to the jury, didn't think that they would like him. The other thing I'd like to point out about the government's argument on the question about whether it should have been allowed in at all under the extrinsically interrelated doctrine, whatever that is, the government's relying on conspiracy cases. Now, those cases also have distribution counts, but it seems to me when the court is talking about why the evidence was important to the government's case and why it should have been allowed in under this doctrine, that it was important, very significant, that there were conspiracies, and they were trying to talk about relationships over long terms, over a long time, and confidence in the person. And I'd like to keep the rest of my time for rebuttal, if that's all right. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Cox, snake charmer.
I've been accused of a lot of things in my 30 years, Your Honor. That's one of the milder ones, probably. I would like to address first, there is no doubt in this case. The entire case was argued, was presented as the jury is either going to believe the confidential informant, Mr. Warren's version of what happened, or the jury wasn't going to believe that happened, that there was sufficient reasonable doubt. And there was nothing hidden from the jury with regard to the warts of Mr. Warren. It's just that the evidence corroborated what his version of the events were, that he received the drugs from the defendant.
Well, how is this case distinguishable from James, from United States versus James? He charged the defendant with a single sale. There were no gaps in the story. Why did the government, with such strong evidence, take the chance that this could be harmless error?
I guess I would start off by saying I didn't think it was that much of a chance when we did that, Your Honor, because we really did, in the pretrial discussions with Mr. Taylor, who tried the case, we talked about the evidence that the government was going to present, how it was going to be limited just to establish this previous relationship between the informant and the defendant. Mr. Taylor even informed the court about this previous arrangement and how we were going to lead him through just generally into these 6 to 10 transactions
six
to establish
prior drug sales. I mean, I think that. Well, I mean, I thought it was really a lot to. If you want to just have a prior relationship, you go through 6 sales that have nothing to do with this sale, different times, different places.
We didn't go through any of the details, Your Honor. We only said that he had been involved in 6 to 10 prior details over the course of the 2 previous years. and that that was a portion of his relationship with the defendant in this case. There were no details. We didn't bring in other persons who had engaged in drug trafficking with the defendant over that period of time.
But I don't see how it's inextricably intertwined with the charged offense at all. It's not inextricably intertwined.
In this particular case, it was important to establish a relationship.
You could have shown they went to the same church. I mean, you could have done anything to show that there was a prior relationship. This is so prejudicial.
Well, and if I, let me just say this, Your Honor, it certainly is prejudicial, but just because evidence is prejudicial doesn't mean that it's not admissible. It has to be unfairly prejudicial.
Right, this is propensity evidence, which is unfairly prejudicial, right?
I don't believe that it was propensity evidence. It explained the terminology that was used between the parties. It explained why during this very brief phone call, the car wash meant a particular car wash as opposed to the many car washes that there are in Champaign-Urbana. Why the informant knew what the price was going to be, even though there was no discussion during those arrangements about what the price of a half was going to be.
You could probably testify about what the price of a half is with the number of drug cases.
I probably could, Your Honor, yes.
I mean, I don't know that it was so out of line that that we need all these priors to show it.
Well, I guess the other thing after doing this for 30 years is if I would know how the Court of Appeals was going to view how I wished to get my evidence in at the time of the trial, and it doesn't mean I don't read your opinions, don't get me wrong. I'm just saying that when I stand here today trying to defend my actions, sometimes I do agree that why did I do that? But at the time, it wasn't like we did anything underhanded. We presented this in advance. We gave it to the judge. The district court judge used his discretion and determined, in fact, he says it's not propensity evidence. So I'm not the only one who didn't believe it wasn't propensity evidence. Maybe we're both mistaken, and I'll take that message back to Judge McCuskey as well as to my colleagues in the office. But in this particular case, I certainly didn't think it was offered for propensity, or I wouldn't have offered it, and I don't think the district judge thought it was offered for that, or he wouldn't have admitted it. In addition, the defendant turned down the opportunity to have the limiting instruction read at the time of this very limited, it's less than 2 pages out of a 2-day trial of this matter. And I guess one other thing I'd just like to...
That stuff is pretty dramatic.
The other stuff is very dramatic compared to this.
Like six... prior drug sales, that's pretty dramatic.
Well, except that, Your Honor, in this particular case, the jury could not have convicted Mr. Moore without believing Mr. Warren. So in terms of its impact on the jury's verdict, they either were going to believe that the transaction happened at the car wash the way Mr. Warren said it happened, or they were not. Because there was nothing that showed a hand-to-hand between Mr. Warren and Mr. Moore, the defendant. They had to rely on that fact by believing Mr. Warren. And so I don't think in the context of this case that the 6 to 10 prior drug dealings that Mr. Warren testified about could possibly have affected the jury's verdict because they would have had to believe Mr. Warren about the ultimate fact in the case. If the court has no further questions, then I would give back the balance of my time. Thank you, and I'll see you tomorrow.
I'll see someone.
Yeah. You scared me. Okay. Really? Okay. Well, thank you both so much, Mr. McGowan, Mr. Cox, and the case will be taken under advisement.